Welcome to the 110th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee, and as usual, I'm joined by Quizmaster Mark Davis. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well as well. Mm. And today we are joined by our friends, John Schiller and Claire Liparillo of the band The Free Coasters. Welcome to the No-No, y'all.
Hey.
Thanks.
We've been wanting to have you guys on for quite some time, so yes, thank you again for joining us. I'm a big fan of the Free Coasters. Anybody that watches my live streams on Trivia knows that because I probably wear more Free Coaster shirts than any other band.
Aww, thank you.
Can you quickly describe your role in the band and your sound for our listeners that might not be familiar with you?
I mean, we're better than everybody else, I know.
Well, obviously, that's why I have so many shirts.
This is John speaking, in case you can't tell me from Claire. I'm the bass player. I guess I kind of started the band, and I drive the van.
Most important.
I drive the van.
I sing for the band.
And you play guitar.
How do I play guitar? Well, you see. You put your left hand on the headstock.
And you shake it all about.
Fretboard.
Unless you're left-handed, of course, because then you got to flip it over.
Not true. I have a guitar student who's left-handed. We're forcing her into mediocrity.
No. Yes, maybe you remember Jimi Hendrix.
There won't be any cool photos of you when you grow up playing a guitar upside down.
That's where she started, and I was like, I mean, that's really cool, but I can't teach you how to make that work, unfortunately. So I could teach you like what I do and like how I play, but you need a specialist.
When I was learning to play baseball, the first guy who was teaching me how to hit was left-handed, and I actually found that helpful because he was a mirror of me when being a flip and a reverse of me, you know.
Is that how you started playing the bass? Was it a natural progression from baseball to bass guitar?
Actually, when I was like 12 years old, I got an acoustic guitar that I don't remember if I ever asked for. And I had a little music book and I was trying to learn how to play chords and stuff like that. And it was really hard. And I found that I was just playing one note at a time all the time and just playing little melodies. And maybe 4 or 5 years later, I figured out, oh, that's what playing bass is. So I had my dad get me a bass for like my 17th birthday.
So it was a bit of a different sound. And speaking of sounds, you guys have an interesting sound. It's kind of a blend of a couple different genres, reggae, a little bit of ska, some soul.
Yeah.
But all kind of, goes into a pretty consistent Free Coaster sound, I would say.
We hope so. We hope it kind of sounds specific to us. Mm-hmm. If we're doing it right, it does.
I think so. It does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So first you guys had Show Up was your debut album, which came out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, you guys picked up Mark Davis, Quizmaster Mark, as a drummer.
I was wondering how long it was going to take for you to mention that I'm in the fucking band.
I almost cut Claire out.
Approximately 3 minutes and 20 seconds, Mark.
I almost cut Claire off when she was talking to say Mark is also in the band.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
So, Mark, you joined up with the band, filling in, and now you play more prominently with them. You recently on the WGCU appearance that you guys had was that in April?
Yeah.
It feels like forever ago.
Time. Ever since quarantine started. Yeah.
Time is like a desert road with no landmarks at this point.
Yeah, man.
2020 has been smudged just like a smudge streak.
Indeed.
Across. Yeah. And you guys went on there to talk about your new album, which is currently available for pre-order, A Different Kind of Heat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is that is a Florida saying if I've ever heard one.
Yes, that's part of what it meant to us when we came up with the title.
Yeah, we wanted a title that meant more than one thing. And John was combing through the lyrics of all the songs for like the perfect line, and we had like a notebook out of like 20 different lines, you, me, and Rick that time at your house. And we're like, well, what do we hate the most? Get rid of that. What do we hate the least? What do we hate the least? Least.
Yeah, it was kind of the opposite of how you'd hope it would go, but everything kind of tends to be that way in a group creative process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know, I feel like that's similar to the process of maybe making a band name.
Yeah, you know? Exactly the band name. The band name. I don't know if any of us love the band name, but it was the one that of the things that were on in the notebook that nobody could say absolutely not to.
But I feel like I really like the album title this time around.
Yeah,
like,
I do too.
I still like Show Up Too, yeah, which was a lyric on the last one. Yeah. But this one comes from one of my favorite songs on the record, Watch It Burn.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a different meaning as a lyric in the song than it does in the title.
Yeah. Of
the album, which we thought was really cool.
Yeah. To kind of, yeah. If you were to hear it in the song as the lyric, it might not even jump out to you as, oh, that's the name of this album. Mm-hmm. Even it might still skip by you, but yeah, we liked
that's
it
awesome.
As, yeah, we liked it as the album title almost specifically because of what you said about a different kind of heat, you mm-hmm. know, a Florida saying, cause like, you know, people will tell you, you know, people will come down here. I've worked in, you know, travel and tourism and entertainment and all kinds of other things. And people come down here from Chicago or New York and they'll come down in February and say, does it really get that hot here? You know, it gets to be 100 degrees in Chicago. It gets to be 100 degrees in New York. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure it does. But 100 degrees in Florida is just a different kind of heat, you know.
So. And I think it also is important to point out that kind of like the subtitle of Show Up was something about like from the swamps of Florida.
Yeah, the swamps,
you know, there's definitely like a kind of an undercurrent of like the effect that Florida has as a state on the sound of the Freecoasters, you know, and kind of like the South in general.
Yeah.
That's pretty prominent and pretty significant and pretty special. I was always, you know, I was a big fan before I got to play with them. And it's been a blast. This new record is, and I can say this because I wasn't on it. I play some percussion on it, which is true. But I'm like, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm like pumping up my own band here. But like this record is like unreal. It's really, really good.
Yes. And if you want to listen to a few tracks of that, listeners, you can go to the Freecoasters Bandcamp. You can listen to the songs Look What You've Done, Shook, and Magnolia, as well as a couple of dub remixes right on the pre-order page. You can check that out. A link to that in the show notes of this episode. We love the Freecoasters. How does the Freecoasters feel about Trivia? That's what I want to know.
I'm that obnoxious guy who I'm that well actually guy in real life. And but I've never played.
But without the fedora.
Yeah.
I just want to make
the baseball cap is off, the fedora is going on.
Yeah.
Whenever the baseball cap comes on, the fedora goes off and the fedora comes on, you know you're in trouble.
And I've never worn a suit jacket with sneakers before. But I've never actually played pub trivia though, because I'm scared to put my imagined crown to the test.
Okay, so this will be like dipping your toe in the water then.
Yeah.
And just in front of a audience of thousands.
Okay. Oh, no pressure then.
No sweat. I know Claire played. Claire has come to my trivia a couple times.
Yeah.
And I know she played Zoom trivia with Mike and Abby and Gina and Brett the other night. So
I'm really good at like insisting that I have the right answer and being wrong, or like
good.
Second guessing my right answer and being like, oh no, you're probably right. I'm always wrong about these things. And then, you know, my answer is like, I'm like, God damn it.
This is why
now that you're saying this and I'm thinking about it, maybe the Freecoasters method of picking a band name and a song title wouldn't be bad for teams playing trivia. Like, which answer do we hate the least?
Yeah.
Out of all these wrong answers. That is a good, I'll call that. Yeah. That's the Freecoasters method.
Yeah.
I think that's
what we'll call that.
I think that's what I learned when FCAT was still a thing.
Yeah. I was about to say, that's how I took my SAT.
Right on. Well, I'm glad that to hear you guys all enjoy trivia. I have a couple different category topics for my share of the quiz for you guys. I'm going to be asking you about comics and crooners, world history, band name origins, math, and book jargon.
Uh-oh.
Those are my categories for this quiz.
Cool.
Mark?
And I'll be asking some questions about disasters, which is always a good thing to throw in, candy, movements, I guess technology would be a good way to put it, and also famous cases.
Famous cases, famous criminal cases?
Well, like
COVID cases? What are we
talking about? Not COVID.
Briefcases?
Oh, no.
Yes, briefcases. No,
Samsonite.
That's correct. Starts with an S.
Oh, no. Oh, brother.
John, how about, I understand you brought some questions as well.
I did. Most of mine, I brought more than three because I wanted to have my bases covered in case mine were way more convoluted than you guys. But the meat and potatoes of my questions are going to be baseball related.
Okay.
He's a big baseball fan.
Got the
fanatic.
Bases covered.
Yeah. Justin Peterson will have a field
very,
day.
Very. Mm-hmm.
He will have a field
Thank
day,
you.
Mark. Very
you
good.
Like that?
Oh, God.
There you go.
I feel like I'm dropping the ball here, but I don't really have a pun. Oh, wait.
Oh, no. All right. You got it in there.
Get me out of here.
Well done.
Claire, trivia categories for your quiz today?
So I tried to have a little variety. So one is nature related. These are all things that I have experience in. One is nature related. One is sort of podiatry or like shoe foot related. And then
foot trivia.
Yes. I better not get any creepy messages after this.
Oh, you will.
Oh. Just send them to Mark.
Okay, good call. And then the next is medically related.
All right. Well, since we are recording this a little bit early, we don't have a weekly wrap-up. But remember, you can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Just find the link in the description of this episode or on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/nononsensetrivia, where we are streaming live on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you follow us on social media to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us.
Won't you?
Was I supposed to sing that?
She missed it.
Yeah, the singer missed it.
The singer did not sing.
There wasn't a drum fill, okay?
She only operates on cues.
That's fine. No, we appreciate you just being here, Claire. You don't have to sing. This is one time you don't got
to
sing.
I'm just here to judge.
We will have some other singing moments later on if you want to jump in.
Okay, well, let me know when they're coming and I'll actually do it. So
you got it. All right, let's take a little break, and then we'll come back with trivia with the Free Coasters in round one. A comics and crooners question to kick off round one for you guys. Comics and crooners. I mean stand-up comics, by the way, not comic books.
Okay.
Which Saturday Night Live alum who had his own sketch show, which debuted in 1996, once was awaiting bypass surgery when Frank Sinatra died in the hospital room next door?
Could you have made that a little longer?
Jesus.
Giving you some information there.
Had his own sketch
show. I'm
sorry,
did you not want that extra hint, Claire? You want me to shorten this down for you?
Everyone's a critic.
Should I guess if I don't know? Or
we're not going to discuss it. So
yeah, we're not to the rate my question section yet, Claire.
Okay, well.
Well, so 1996, Dana Carvey.
Yeah, that was my guess too.
I know he had his own sketch show. Bypass surgery.
That would explain why he disappeared off of the scene for quite a while, if he was recovering from bypass surgery.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you're mentioning it, I think I did listen to, there was the Kevin Pollak chat hour or whatever. There's a Kevin Pollak podcast. I think you and I have talked about, like, an interview.
That's a great show.
It is great. It, like, goes really in depth. And I think he may have talked about that. I'm trying to think if anybody else from
with their own
Saturday Night Live had their own sketch show. 96.
That sounds like the right period of time.
Yeah.
For Dana
Claire, Conner. Can you think of anybody from Saturday Night Live that had a sketch show after they left?
I don't know anything.
Okay.
Well, somebody out there is screaming that.
Well, it's better than saying that you think you know and you're trying to force the answer.
Someone out there is screaming that Dave Chappelle had been on Saturday Night Live.
I'm sure. Absolutely.
But that wasn't in 1996.
We once had a debate on how many people would answer how long is a fortnight wrong. And I was able to ask it at my trivia, and Lee was certain everyone was going to get it. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the success rate? It was, what, 40%?
It might have even been lower than that.
Really?
Yeah. I remember more people did not know a fortnight. I think I was at that trivia when you asked it, too. I was, like, shocked looking around the room.
Just
like,
looking around.
Who are these people?
Horrified. How do these people get dressed? The answer is, of course, 3 weeks. I'm just kidding. 2 weeks.
No.
Yeah, I think Dana Carvey has to be it, yeah?
Yeah, that was my guess.
I think we're going to go with Dana Carvey.
I trust you.
That's correct. Dana
yes.
Carvey.
Yay, I'm right.
It was actually his second bypass surgery, because the first time they actually installed the bypass in the wrong artery.
Oh, my God.
So imagine coming out of surgery and they're like, we got to go back in.
Well, how fast did they find that out? Don't they have to, like, crack your ribs open in the center and everything to do heart surgery like that?
I don't know that they found it out very quickly, but it was a while. But it was the second time going in. He was able to successfully sue the first time.
Yeah.
He got, like, a $7.5 million award for that, or reward, shit, or settlement. I don't know if it's a settlement if you successfully sue. It's probably not called a settlement, but he got 7.5 mil. He ended up donating that to charity, going back to have the proper bypass put in. And as the story goes, Sinatra's wife, Barbara Marx Sinatra, did not notify his children of their father's final hospitalization. But Carvey would later tell Newsday that he was just 6 feet away from Sinatra when he died. Isn't fate cruel? I ask
Holy
you.
Damn.
Wow.
Yep. Dana Carvey.
Doing a Frank Sinatra impression right next to him.
I remember watching that Dana Carvey show. I remember watching that on TV, and it was nuts.
Yeah.
Robert Smigel from Saturday Night Live and Steve Carell both.
Louis C.K. wrote on that show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was the head writer, was it?
Many peeps.
The one skit from that show that I can remember was it was supposed to be an ironic sketch, like the prank you'll pull when you pull through a drive through. Not that any of us would do this, but where you'll order a drink or whatever and pay for it, and then they give you the drink, you throw it back through the window and drive away. Well, the sketch was Dana Carvey going through a drive through, paying for his food and driving away.
there was a series of those. It was like
held punch.
It was like it was like what was it? It was something like the Good Samaritan Pranksters or something like that. They'd like pay for gas and then they'd get in and drive off and they'd be like like giggling.
I only remember the one, and I remember being so confused by it.
Yeah, there's one. There was another sketch on there that was the main racists. And it was like two guys like whittling in front of their house, and it's like, "Ah, yeah, what you doing today?" And he's like, "Thinking about going and beating up some Jews." It's just like two like old.
Was that
baby
on their show, or was that on Saturday Night Live?
I think it was on the Dana Carvey show.
Okay, I remember that sketch, but I don't know that I ever saw the Dana Carvey show. Maybe I did.
Too Funny to Fail was a documentary that was done about that show. If you've never seen it, it's amazing. And it talks about just like the powerhouse writing staff they had, all the people that were on the show, and like how far ahead of its time it was. That now, I mean, it would just like clean house. But back then it was just a little too ahead of its time with like,
wasn't it also like in prime time or something?
Yeah,
it was, like, it was 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock or something.
Yeah, it was definitely like a tough spot.
Not what people are looking for in the '90s anymore. Right. Sketch comedy in prime time like that. Like that's a very 70s kind of thing in my mind.
Yeah. Very good though. The documentary is really good. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. In the case Sid and Marty Croft Television Productions Incorporated versus McDonald's Corporation, McDonald's was sued by the brothers claiming that the entire McDonaldland premise plagiarized what television show? Lee looked orgasmic there for a minute. Head tilted back, eyes fluttered.
Can you repeat the question?
I can. In the case Sid and Marty Croft Television Productions Incorporated versus McDonald's Corporation, McDonald's was sued by the brothers claiming that the entire McDonaldland premise plagiarized what television show? McDonaldland, of course, Grimace, originally with eight arms to steal milkshakes. Mayor McCheese, etc.
Well, guys, I do believe I know the answer to this.
Ooh. Hence the
I at
orgasm.
Least know the name of the character. I'm not sure if the show was named after the character. I think it was. And if I remember correctly, they actually did some development work with McDonald's, and then the contract ended. And they just took their idea. Or some of their trade secrets, at least, because the main character of the show, H.R. Puffin Stuff, was his name. He was like a giant 6 foot tall puppet. You know, it was like a puppet costume, which I think had some unique features. So I think that's the answer. I think H.R. Puffin Stuff is kind of the spiritual predecessor of McDonaldland. That sound about right to you guys?
That's better than anything I was going to come up with. The only puppets I could think of were Henson, and that wouldn't match up.
Yeah, no, yeah. I thought of something that was not a TV show, and then I remembered that that
wait,
was
what was
like,
that?
So all I could think about was Coming to America. Mm-hmm.
That's all you could ever think about.
The royal the name of that royal penis is clear.
McDowell's, I think.
McDowell's.
Yeah, so that was like that, but that was a parody of McDonald's, obviously. But so, right. But that was the only thing that could that would come to mind.
So let's go with H.R. Puffin Stuff. I feel like 99% confident that's the answer.
Yeah,
I could be wrong though.
Mark? You are 99% correct.
All right, what was I wrong about?
No, you're right.
Oh, okay.
It's just round
yeah,
up.
So they the advertising agency got in contact with them to see about drumming up a couple of ideas roughly in the same vein and then told them that the campaign had been canceled, but it hadn't been canceled. They actually had won the contract, but instead told them it had been canceled, hired some of their former employees, and tried to, on the low, just kind of like put together the same kind of advertising campaign without paying them whatever crazy fees they were going to charge. And yeah, the Croft boys saw right through it and sued them for buku mega bucks. And yeah, it also should be pointed out that H.R. Puffin Stuff himself is a mayor. And one of the main characters in McDonaldland was Mayor McCheese. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there were like a lot of mayors going around in the late 60s, early 70s, whatnot. But I don't know. It was just like they just thought it would be
the high point of mayors. Mayors never had it better. All this representation.
It's just a high mayor demand.
The high water.
I had a cheeseburger.
Yeah. Mayor. No one wanted to be governor. Senator, get fucked. I want to be a goddamn mayor. It's going to rule.
John's going to kill me.
Do you think before they came up with Ronald McDonald, they were like, his name is R.H. Stuff and Puff?
Maybe.
To spoonerize it? Stuff and Puff. Spoonerize it and call it a day.
Something else.
Burger Durger. His name
Hamburgers.
Is R.M. Hamburger.
Like, the stuff in Puff sounds like something entirely different.
Yeah. Sounds like something a lot more fun.
Donald T. Hamburger.
All right, Claire. Give us what you got. Yeah, remember we said it like three or four times.
I know, okay. For God's sake. I'm just like, I thought we were talking about Stuff and Pups.
So well, we were. I don't know. That can only happen so long.
About Mr. Cheese Man. So on a,
Mr. Cheese Man.
I feel like you guys have these like very involved and like, you've got this whole narrative around your question. And mine is like very straightforward. And I'm like.
That's fine.
That's fine, Claire. Don't be. You don't have to be self-conscious about it.
Feel inadequate.
We've been talking for a long time about
how quizmasters have different styles. Some quizmasters like a short and sweet question. Some like having a whole like explanation of the subject matter beforehand and then ask a short question.
Okay, well.
It's all good.
I feel like I'm going to go with one of my easier questions. This is my nature question because I love nature and
nature loves you.
Particular person. Is very important to me. So what historical figure is known as the father of national parks?
I know this.
I think I know it too.
Let's all say it on three. Mark, do you know it?
I think I know it.
All right, we'll go 1, 2, 3.
John Muir.
Yes!
All right.
Wasn't he recently canceled? Didn't the Sierra Club is backing away from him because he had some uncomfortable opinions about race?
Ooh. Oh, no! Yeah. I had no idea.
And now Claire's life is ruined.
This is just in the last 2 weeks or so. I don't remember exactly what the story was. But
Claire loves John Muir, too.
But the... to be fair, I think I knew the answer before she ever asked a question because... I read her Facebook.
Oh, dropping hints.
Well, she wasn't talking about this. She just talks about John Muir maybe once every 3 or 4 months.
He basically convinced Teddy Roosevelt to form the national park system, right?
Yes, he did. And he fought very diligently for a lot of the national parks that we have, like specifically for those parks, like Yosemite is a big one.
He has his own in California. It's a Sequoia.
Yeah, he has a whole trail, the John Muir Trail.
That's right.
And a lot of people hike that, and it's very difficult. And it's crazy to me to think that he did this in, like, leather-soled shoes. Mm. You know, and, that he kind of, like...
And a leather onesie.
You know?
And a leather gimp mask.
But fun fact about gloves. John Muir...
A hot dog eating mask.
And that was him in Pulp Fiction.
Well, I look up to him for his role in preserving
conservation.
Conservation and preservation of some really beautiful landmarks in our country. And I wrote a song about him for a songwriter group that I belonged to during quarantine called God's Cathedral. So if you guys go to my YouTube, mm-hmm. you can listen to that.
We'll put a link in the show notes to that too.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Thanks.
I just recently found out that this like woman that I knew a long time ago, I like reconnected with her. I found her she found me on Facebook and I was talking to her and she was like, my son's name is Marky. I named him after you. And I was like, what? And like, we never knew each other like really well, but she was like, I always just thought like you were like a really like caring guy and a nice guy. So I named my kid after you. And I was like, this is fucking insane. Like, I feel like I'm on fucking drugs. And then, like, now she started posting all this Trump shit. Oh, and I kind of feel like I want to pull this, like, card to feel like, as the namesake of your son, like, don't fucking do this. Like, I don't know if
she
that's,
just
like,
renames him Donald.
Is I don't know if I'm want? Allowed. I don't know if I'm allowed to flex like that or what, but, like, it's, like, so bizarre. Like, I was just so blindsided. I was, like, I was better friends with her boyfriend than I was her. And then, like, she, like, said she did that, and I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, it's so bizarre to me.
Just to elaborate on what John was talking about earlier with the Sierra Club. So, yes, the president or the executive director, Michael Brune, has issued a statement just kind of acknowledging racist comments made by John Muir. They're not advocating right now to rename he's kind of involved, it seems, in a lot of like environmentalism as a whole.
Uh-huh.
They're being critical of that period. They're not advocating for renaming any of his stuff, but they are petitioning the National Park Service to change the name of Joseph LeConte Lodge in Yosemite, who was a proponent of eugenics.
Oh,
yeah. So there's some association there, but yeah, we haven't looked into this. Obviously, we just are kind of learning about it now. But yes, John Muir, a historical environmentalist who helped found the National Park System.
Eugenics, for anybody who doesn't know, is killing everybody named Eugene.
It's no. The study of people.
It's a different metric.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the study of people. Metric. Named Eugene. You're right.
Yeah, based on race.
John.
All right, John.
Okay,
yes.
Me. All right. I'm going to have kind of one of those rambling ones, I think. It's going to be about baseball. And one of Major League Baseball's most famous wordsmiths was simultaneously the oldest person to make his Major League debut and the oldest person to ever play in a Major League Baseball game. Those weren't at the same time. Those are just two things he's done. Who is he?
Wordsmith.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know
choice
if this
words.
Is getting led down the wrong path here, but when I think of old, I think senior citizen could, and I know this isn't related to why their name is senior, but Cal Ripken Sr. Didn't
well,
he? Didn't
yeah,
he?
I was thinking, well, Cal Ripken kind of came to my mind. I always think of like the pictures of him on baseball cards balding. You said it was a player?
It was a player, yes.
Okay.
He was the oldest to debut in Major League Baseball, and what was the other?
He was also the oldest person to ever play in a Major League Baseball game. Those two feats were 17 years apart. They weren't the same feat.
Wow.
But
does Fauci throwing out the pitch count? It's a pretty old guy.
I'll give you two little hints. One of them is that his oldest player to ever appear in a Major League Baseball game was supposed to be a publicity stunt. But and the other hint would be, think of why in Major League history someone might not have been able to play in Major League Baseball until they were a little older than you'd expect them to be in the history of Major League Baseball. What might have caused that?
I see.
Okay.
So it could be based on that hint. It could be
definitely someone
due
white
to segregation.
Oh,
Lee is closer.
But I was also thinking it could be like Michael Jordan based on that hint, because he already had a long career in basketball.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
I know less than nothing about baseball, so I'm just going to
play with your bottle.
Yep.
Can you get it closer to the mic?
Would you like me to?
You know who was known for weren't the Griffies known for being like the first father-son team to play together?
Yeah, here. But I'm thinking like publicity stunt.
But John, you said the publicity stunt was related to somebody who didn't take the record.
No, it's the same person, but it's his oldest person to debut was 17 years before his oldest person to ever play, period. So he debuted at a very advanced age, and then he was brought back at an even more advanced age 17 years later as what was supposed to be a publicity stunt, except he was actually remarkably successful in that publicity stunt.
Huh.
So it was actually a good baseball decision, as it turned out. This might have been too much of a stumper for the first round. I'm sorry.
No, it's
fine. It's all good.
I'm more of the sports guy between the two of us, and I'm not much of a baseball guy. Lee is just, look at him. Pathetic.
Somebody listening to this knows the answer. I guarantee that. It's
oh,
not,
yeah, I'm sure.
For hardcore baseball fans, it'll
like,
ring
oh,
a bell.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It'll well, we have someone who's been on the show a couple times, Justin Peterson, who's a baseball fanatic. He's like you. He's got like a million baseball hats, collects them.
What about Hank Aaron?
Let's go with Hank Aaron. I think that's a good guess.
I think that's that the segregated leagues. I think that that kind of fits within that time period and a publicity stunt. I mean, you know, it could be he was known for being very good.
If anybody's going to be good when they come back 17 years later, it would be him.
Hank Aaron.
We're going to go with Hank Aaron.
Claire, is that good with you?
I mean,
she doesn't care.
I'm just
she'll jump in sooner or later.
I'm just here for the party.
We could get you a vape like Tommy.
Oh, really?
That was his big contribution.
Oh, good. Well, Tommy and I probably know a lot of the same things.
He also aggressively took off his headphones. All right, Hank Aaron.
You guys are unfortunately wrong.
No. Oh.
The answer is Satchel Paige.
Oh.
Satchel Paige, as I said, a wordsmith, is responsible for some very famous quotes. One of them that supposedly he said, but I can't find verification, is to work like you don't need the money and dance like nobody is looking.
Oh, wow.
Supposedly he said, but I can't find verification of that. Things I know he did say.
Immortalized on Bed Bath & Beyond pillows.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say he worked exactly. for
one. Don't eat fried foods. It angries up the blood. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? The only change is that baseball has turned Paige from a second-class citizen into a second-class immortal.
Wow.
Never look back. Something may be gaining on you. These are some famous things. Oh, what my personal favorite of his famous quotes that I try to live by. You win a few, you lose a few. Some of them get rained out, but you got to dress for all of them.
Huh. That's
so
awesome.
As far as his major league debut, yes, it was delayed by playing in the Negro Leagues, debuting before the integration of Major League Baseball, which also, well, Hank Aaron didn't debut before integration, but the Negro Leagues had not died out. So you were right that Hank Aaron did play in the Negro Leagues. He played for a team called the Indianapolis Clowns before the Braves bought his contract and made him a major leaguer. But
the Indianapolis Clowns?
The Indianapolis Clowns. Almost
it's an early version of ICP.
Yeah. Almost almost all Negro Leagues teams have embarrassing names like that. Like the Indianapolis Clowns. Some of them, like Satchel Paige, played for the Kansas City Monarchs, which is a great name for a baseball
team.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Which is where the Kansas City Royals later tried to kind of emulate with their name when they came into Major League Baseball.
Yes.
But Satchel Paige debuted in Major League Baseball. Let's see here. I have notes. He debuted in Major League Baseball at the age of 42 years and 2 days.
Holy shit.
In the year 1948. He debuted in the Negro Leagues at age 16, so he'd played for 26 years of professional and semi-pro baseball before he made it to the major leagues. Or was it 16 years? That would be 26 years before he ever debuted in Major League Baseball. He would continue pitching. He never really retired. He pitched, went back to the Negro Leagues after 5 years in the big leagues. He pitched in the World Series. He made 2 All-Star teams, all of this after the age of 42. So he was a fantastic player. He went back to the Negro Leagues. He played in Central and South America, in the Caribbean. And then in 1965, at the age of 59 and 80 days, the Kansas City Athletics brought him back as a publicity stunt. They had him sit out in the bullpen in a rocking chair and rub liniment onto his pitching elbow. In full view of the fans.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It was supposed to be a publicity stunt, but he came into the game against the Boston Red Sox and pitched 3 innings. He allowed only a hit. He allowed a double to Carl Yastrzemski, future Hall of Famer.
Right.
It was the only hit he allowed. So it was actually a good baseball decision. He could have kept playing. And as a matter of fact, he only played the one game. He went back to playing professionally in barnstorming teams and whatnot. And my favorite factoid, because I'm factoid, I just use my own.
You did your own.
You can use that word liberally here.
Oh, no. Well, factoid is actually not true.
We love them.
And that's why it's my pet peeve. But my favorite little fact about Satchel Paige, because I'm a Braves fan, is when he was 69 years old. No, 63 years old.
Not nice.
In the year 1969. The Atlanta Braves owner, Bill Bartholomew, signed him to a 1-year contract had him come to one spring training game and let him stay home the rest of the year, but paid him just so he could make the service time he needed to receive a major league pension. A nice,
Satchel Paige.
Yeah, a nice act that the Braves reached out and gave to him. But Satchel Paige is one of my heroes.
So. What a great awesome. Ass name, though, Satchel Paige.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. Especially like... for a wordsmith.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess his real first name was Leroy. There was I don't really know where he got the name. There's a quote about. Mm-hmm. About his nickname, another him being a wordsmith, he said, people think the nickname has to do with my feet, but it really doesn't. But once somebody gets in their mind that you got big feet, suddenly you do. What that has to do with a satchel, I have no idea.
So that's amazing.
I don't know where satchel came from.
You know, on second thought, it would have been wrong, but I with the wordsmith thing, I should have guessed Ernie Banks. Because yeah, he's the one who said, let's play two. Yeah. But all right, Lee.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Michael Jordan, only 31 when he started playing baseball. In my mind, he is an old man.
Yeah.
When he started, oh. But he's younger than I am now.
Well, he went back and played more basketball after that, won more championships mm-hmm. even after he did that.
Yep. He won the second three. The last dance documentary that ESPN did is a 10-hour documentary. It's a 10-episode, 1-hour miniseries. But holy shit, especially if you were alive during that time, even if you weren't, it's such a fascinating – you know, it doesn't just go into him. It talks a lot about Scottie Pippen. It talks a lot about Dennis Rodman and all the events surrounding them and everything else. And if you're a competitive person or you're into sports or you just like, you know, real drama, like true, like, you know, just it's all about, you know, how the Bulls team came to be what it was. You know, the first three championships, him leaving, how the Bulls did in between, how fucked Scottie Pippen got. You know, it's really, really, really good.
Check that out.
I don't know if you guys engage in unsubstantiated conspiracy theories, but
I like to look at them. I don't know if I absorb them.
Is this regarding the explosion yesterday?
No, this is regarding Michael Jordan and playing baseball. You may remember that Michael Jordan's dad was shot in a quote-unquote road rage incident, I think, in the state of Florida on the highway.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, somebody ran him off the road and shot him to death. And that supposedly is what prompted Michael Jordan to retire from basketball and take up baseball, was because his father always wanted him to be a baseball player. The unsubstantiated conspiracy theory is...
Let me guess. Dana Carvey was riding shotgun?
Yes, exactly. They had just driven through a drive-thru, paid for their food, and left. No, apparently Michael Jordan had huge, huge gambling debts. His father was killed by some mob-connected hitman related to the debts he hadn't paid. And his retirement from the NBA was kind of mandated by the league.
David Stern.
Yeah. Made him sit out because what bad publicity that would be, kind of a la Pete Rose. He was betting on the sport he played. And that's always a bad look.
There was a ton of, wasn't there a big, expose of that in basketball regarding the refs?
The point shaving.
Like 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Point shaving.
Mm-hmm. Which has been, I mean, they won't admit it, but that's been going on for years and years and years. But
yeah, yeah, that was I remember the news saying that he had pulled over to take a nap and he was robbed.
If that's what it was, yeah.
Was the, but I mean, there were multiple, yeah. You know, of course, yeah. Then it gets
I could be totally wrong about the road rage part of it, but the conspiracy theory is about the gambling debt.
Yeah.
So
crazy
big
stuff.
Big if true. Big if true.
Yeah.
World history question for you guys.
Okay.
Albania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Hungary, Poland, and Romania were all members of what defense treaty formed as a response to West Germany's integration to NATO in 1955? What was the name of that defense treaty that involved Albania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Hungary, Poland, and Romania, formed in 1955 and lasted throughout most of the 20th century?
This is a case of one of those. It's like one of those cases for me of, have I ever heard of this thing before? Right off, wondering. Wasn't there something called the Eastern Bloc? I don't know if that was just like a name for
Yeah, well, that I don't know if that was a formalized thing or if that was just the Soviet satellite nations were called that, where they kind of installed their own dictators, but didn't absorb them into the Soviet Union. I don't know if that was a formalized name or not, though. I have a feeling I'm going to know it when you say it, but I don't know it. I don't have an answer
Bulgaria,
for it.
Bulgaria, Albania. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like what you would even call that area.
The Balkans? Balkans something?
Ooh, the Balkan.
But if just going from there, I'd have to just make something up. I wouldn't know the answer.
Christopher Balkan?
Christopher Balkan Block. The Balkan Block. The Balkan Boys. The Big Bad Balkan Boys.
The Big Bad Balkan Boys from Company B. Bum, bum. Oh, no. Fuck. I feel like there's something. What's the Falklands? That's an island.
No, that's an island. No, the Falklands are South America. That was the English controlled it and wouldn't give it back to Argentina.
So it's like Cold War time.
Yeah.
Freezing.
It's Cold War time.
It's Cold War time. So you said until what year, Lee?
Throughout the, I didn't give a specifying final year, but it was through most of the rest of the 20th century.
Yeah, I guess you just got to go Eastern Bloc something, the Eastern Bloc something treaty. I don't know.
What are you looking for? The name of the treaty?
The name of the defense treaty.
I wonder if it's like. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's some famous sounding acronym. Fart.
It was in response to which
West Germany.
West
going
Germany's
into NATO.
Integration to NATO in 1955.
Okay, so in response to NATO.
So NATO is what? The
I'll give you guys one little hint here. It was named at the defense treaty was named after the place where it was signed.
Oh. NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty
Organization.
Yeah. So, okay, it was named after the place. So it has to have been one of those countries, right?
Something compact.
Maybe Romania, not, though.
Bulgaria. Czechoslovakia.
Because I feel like...
Do you want the list of countries again?
Yeah.
Sure.
Albania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Hungary, Poland, and Romania.
Warsaw. The Warsaw Pact.
I thought the Warsaw Pact was World War II. I thought
that was... You know better than I do. I just know there's a thing called the Warsaw Pact and it's in Poland.
Well, he gave them all to us in alphabetical order so that he wouldn't slip.
Look at this asshole.
One first. Did you notice when he read them to us?
Albania, I did not notice
Bulgaria,
that.
Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia.
So we had one question someone asked and they were like, oh, 11, this list of 11 things and then listed them, but only listed 10. And we didn't think to like count them. Uh-huh. And they were leaving out this one that was, it was like, you know, what are these things by like mental health professionals or whatever. And it was a serial killer. And the one they left out was murder. Like, oh, yeah, that would have been a dead giveaway.
That would have been a dead giveaway.
These are all stages of what phenomenon, I think,
yes,
was the question.
Yes, that was a question, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And serial killing.
I mean, you could go with Warsaw Pact, I guess. I mean, that's as close as we're going to come.
Yeah, we'll just go with Warsaw Pact.
That's correct.
Oh, my God.
The Warsaw Pact.
I was I totally steered him wrong there. I thought the Warsaw Pact was the Hitler non-aggression treaty that was signed that Hitler just walked all over. What was that called?
No, I think that was some, or maybe that was an earlier version, but in the context of these countries coming together as a response to Warsaw was around before this as well. I'm sure other documents were signed there.
Yeah.
It was officially called the Treaty of Friendship, Cooperation, and Mutual Assistance. It mostly worked to prevent war among the countries that were involved, but You could not leave once you were in. It was like the Hotel California. Hungary tried to leave in 1956, and Russia came in to squash the uprising, killing 2,500 citizens. The countries also worked together on one major operation, which was Operation Danube, where 250,000 troops from all countries except for Albania and Romania invaded Czechoslovakia to stop liberal reforms in what was called the Prague Spring. And towards the end of the Cold War in 1989, most communist governments of those countries were overthrown, and the treaty was disbanded in February of 1991, preceding the fall of the Soviet Union in December of that year.
No kidding.
Huh.
Very good.
I'll be damned.
Well, now I got to look up what the hell I was thinking of from World War II. This,
look it up, yeah. We'll figure it out.
Aggression.
All right, here's your – oh, no. Oh, yeah, here's your last question of the first round. Oh, no. On May 6, 1937, the German passenger airship LZ-129 Hindenburg caught fire and was destroyed during its attempt to dock with its mooring mast at Naval Air Station Lakehurst in what U.S. state?
Can I hear that one more time, Mark?
Mm-hmm. On May 6th, 1937, the German passenger airship LZ-129 Hindenburg caught fire and was destroyed during its attempt to dock with its mooring mast at Naval Air Station Lakehurst in what U.S. state?
Lakehurst is the name of the base, you said?
U.S. Naval Base.
Does that ring a bell, y'all? Lakehurst?
Does not. Not on its own.
I need the kids' questions.
Well, we still got, you know, we're less than halfway through here, so there's more questions.
And look, you got 50 possible answers.
Less
than that.
I feel like it's New Jersey for some reason. It's just what comes into my mind was that the Hindenburg was
John,
in New Jersey.
That was the first thing that came into my mind, too. And this worked last week. We had a question about what year did the Titanic sink in? And me and Peter both thought 1914 at the exact same time. It worked out. That's all I'm saying.
No, whoa, whoa. 1912.
I thought it was 1914.
Oh, I think it was 1912.
I would have said 1911. So
I thought 1911.
Trivia man.
That's why I think it was 1912.
I think we tried to go to 1912, but then came back to 1914.
Man, if it's 1912, which I'm pretty sure it is, it's so weird that you come up with a different answer a week later.
You're right, it is 1912.
How weird that...
Did you say a couple weeks, Mark? It's been 5 days.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Forget what I was saying, John. Don't trust me.
Well, my best guess is New Jersey. I feel like just my memory was that it was out in a meadow in New Jersey. And that's why there was so much press coverage, was it was all press from New York and it was easy to access.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I think I went New York and then I was like, that would be like etched in my brain if it was New York. And New Jersey is very close by.
Yeah, I feel like New Jersey, that's my best guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we got to give an answer, that would be I'm not going to come up with with anything better than that.
Blair?
I'm going to go with it because I feel like, I mean, for no other reason than I feel like the name of the place is, it sounds like the word, the name. Well,
he has something to say.
I think we just got a package delivered.
Oh,
he has a guess.
Hi, Bayou.
Well, are we going with New Jersey? Is that our best guess?
Yep.
Yes, I think so.
Somehow these minds pulled the correct answer. New Jersey.
All right.
Is correct. I didn't even know what happened in the United States.
Oh, yeah, because you had the news guy going, oh, the humanity.
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised that they cover the news in a bevy of languages. So
in the transatlantic voice.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, the huge manatee.
John, that, by the way, the Polish, German-Polish non-aggression pact was called the German-Polish non-aggression pact. So where was it signed? Was it signed in Warsaw, though?
I have no idea.
I have the page up here. I mean, Poland was involved, so.
Yeah, that'd be a good place to do it.
Probably not too far off from Warsaw. Yeah, there was Warsaw. So it was a Warsaw Pact, but not Warsaw Pact.
I knew it happened, and I had a vague idea of where, so I just attached the location to the fact and got it completely wrong.
Well, how about we take a little break?
Great idea.
I like that.
Let's do it. Let's take a break, and then we will be back with some more questions in round two. We're back. We don't have any missed correction or no notes this week, so no theme. But if you still want to record a version of that theme song, listeners, please send it to us. We could use a couple extra versions of that. Just write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media. Or if you hear anything out of sorts and you want to missed correct us, you can use those methods to get a hold of us as well. Mark. Will you please do the honor or have the honor? Will you please have the honor of kicking off round two?
I will have the honor. I will do the honor, and I will the honor.
Thank you.
Your honor, Amiri Baraka is widely recognized as the founder of what movement in 1965 Harlem?
Amiri Baraka?
Yes.
1965 Harlem? Movement.
Yes.
The Harlem Renaissance is it?
And that's the 30s.
Is it?
That's
the second 20s. Harlem Renaissance then.
Yeah, maybe.
The Renaissance. The Renaissance.
Amiri Baraka. It's got to be. It's got to be. I don't know what the name of it would be, but something having to do with like Afrocentric civil rights.
65, that fits. Yeah.
But what would be the name of the movement?
It wasn't like a when was beat poetry a thing?
Oh, beat poetry, that's the 50s and like even the late 40s, like post-war. Like that's before the hippies.
Mark, did you say it was New York?
Yeah, Harlem.
Harlem.
You didn't say, okay, wasn't sure if we brought Harlem to the equation or if that was in the question. Okay. Yeah.
It would be
so
Nation of Islam.
Political movement, art movement. He didn't specify what type of movement it is. Would the Black Panthers be considered a movement? And did they start in New York?
They were in Oakland.
Okay.
John knows all the things.
I don't know this.
You know everything else.
He knows everything adjacent to this.
Well, I was going to say, is it Black Israelites? Would that be considered a movement?
Yeah, it could be something like that. Yeah. I feel like it's too late for the Nation of Islam, 65. Mm-hmm. But the name of Amiri Baraka makes me think Nation of Islam, you know.
I wonder if it's the Black Israelites that, you know, say that Black people are the chosen people of God. 65, I feel like when I've been in New York, I usually see at least one group of Black Israelites on a corner.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know if not protesting necessarily, kind of protesting.
Is this like, would that be like related to when people started like changing their names to?
Well, that's what made me think of Nation of Islam, because when you join the Nation of Islam, you like shed your anglicized name. Well, I mean, I don't think necessarily you have to. God, what an uncomfortable question, because it just makes us all look so ignorant. And we're going to, in the course of guessing, we're going to say so many
Wouldn't
things
be the first time on this podcast.
Yeah, no.
For me, that's for sure.
You know how many questions we ask about Africa and like countries in Africa and where they are and how we do not know at all?
Yeah, right.
But we're learning.
We're learning. And that's the whole point here.
I feel like that
Yeah, I'm not going to come up with anything better than the beginning of the Black Israelite movement.
I think
let's go
I
with
feel
it.
Comfortable with that, Lee.
Yeah. I'm the sorry, Black that's Israelites. Incorrect.
If you say Nation of Islam,
it is not the Nation of Islam. It is
one of those buttons.
So you guys were kind of on the right path with the Harlem Renaissance, and it was basically considered kind of the continuation or Harlem Renaissance 2 Electric Boogaloo, if you will.
Damn it.
It was the Black Arts Movement.
Mm.
The Black Arts Movement. So, yeah, Amiri Baraka, originally born Leroy Jones, in 1965, he established the Black Arts Repertory Theater School, or BARTS. Yeah. This is where Maya Angelou came into prominence and a bunch of other famous black poets and artists. And, you know, started making black, you know, Afrocentric art, black art, which also brought in a lot of, you know, Latin people and gay people, you know, seeing people that weren't white men and then in shockingly all. White women were added into the mix and made them feel like they also could make art. So it was kind of a giant wellspring of art coming from people of color. And it all started with, you know, Amiri Baraka is widely considered to be the founding member of the Black Arts Movement.
That's great. That's awesome. That's the kind of shit we should
learn. Amiri Baraka.
Yeah.
I should have learned that somewhere.
Well, now you did.
Yeah, right.
Band name origins.
Okay.
What short-lived but influential British band faced criticism over their Auschwitz-inspired band name, as well as cover art from their 1978 debut EP album, An Ideal for Living, which depicted a Hitler youth pounding a drum?
Can you say it again, the first part? Auschwitz-inspired?
What short-lived but influential British band faced criticism over their Auschwitz-inspired band name, as well as cover art from their 1978 debut EP album, An Ideal for Living, which depicted a Hitler youth pounding a drum?
It's got to be Joy Division.
Mm.
I don't know the EP, but it's got to be Joy Division. 78, their debut was 78, you said?
Yes, debut EP.
And they were influential, so it's got to be somebody I've heard of. And that's the only...
If they've been influential, John's heard of them.
Well, I'm 78. Like, oh, influential from the 40s, maybe not, but, you know, influential from the 70s, I feel like it'd have to be Joy Division.
So, yeah, so I guess I was thinking first that the band name was the Auschwitz-inspired, but it was the name of the EP.
No, I think Joy Division is...
Oh, that's Auschwitz-inspired?
I don't know it to be specifically Auschwitz-inspired, but I do know it to be... related to the Holocaust.
Wow, I didn't know that.
A very uncomfortable, prickly kind of thing to describe if you can go backwards from prisoners. Yeah. You know, I have to say Joy Division.
Yeah, what do you think, Claire?
Hey Siri, what is Joy Division? that's a band inside joke.
Hey Siri.
You don't get that.
Alexa. let's go with Joy Division. We're going to go with Joy Division.
Two strong audiophiles in this room, not myself included. Yep. Let's do it.
That's correct.
Yes. Thanks, John.
The name comes from, John was sussing right on the name. The name comes from a 1953 novella titled House of Dolls, by Holocaust survivor Yehiel Denor, who was writing at the time under his pen name Kasetnik 135633. The term Joy Division itself refers to the Nazi sexual slavery wing of concentration camps. And aside from the name and the exploitive imagery, the band included other artifacts of fascism, such as an excerpt from the novella on the song No Love Lost, where the entire third verse, or most of the third verse, is just words taken from the book. The band was reportedly wary of fascism coming to England and thought that it could be prevented by invoking it in some way, but it did not have the response that they had anticipated. They later on replaced the art for the EP to some scaffolding, and later changed the name of the band to New Order after reforming following the suicide of lead singer Ian Curtis.
Yeah.
Something about people named Ian and Nazism. Except for Ian MacKay, I guess.
Talk about Ian Stewart, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Screwdriver.
Or Ian McClellan, who played a Nazi in Apt Pupil and was a concentration camp survivor.
In X-Men. Yes.
I mean, it makes all of that about the fear of fascism all makes sense when you couple it with, like, the 1970s, you know, Enoch Powell National Front thing going on in England. We were just talking about David Bowie and his uncomfortable attachments to fascism at the time that he never really apologized for, just kind of said, I'm an artist, I can do what I want, but he never faced any consequences for
it. Do you know who I am?
I don't know if it was have you heard of this, Lee?
It vaguely rings a bell, but I'm not exactly sure.
When Powell was running, I learned about this because I was reading about the origins of Rock Against Racism, that the Clash were a big
part of. Joy Division, I think, played one of those benefits.
Yeah. And so I guess it was founded in response to Eric Clapton and David Bowie, among a couple of other incidents where some people wanted to stand up and say, like, all of this comes from black music, so how could rock and roll be racist? You know, like, rock and roll as an entity exists in a very specific way against racism, and that was what they put the events together. But Bowie's role, I don't know if it was a Playboy interview or what the interview was. My mind always says everything controversial was a Playboy interview. He said something along the lines of he was voting for Enoch Powell. He thought everybody should vote for Enoch Powell because every once in a while you need a far right party to come in and clean things out or something like that.
And wow, that seems vaguely relevant right now, vaguely familiar.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
To some sentiments.
Yeah, and the Clapton portion of it was Clapton was on stage said some to a crowd of like 40,000 people. He's never apologized for this either. His only explanation was, I used to drink a lot, but he said he was voting for Enoch Powell and encouraged all 30,000 people in the crowd to vote for Enoch Powell, and said it was because we need to get the WOGs out of our country. The WOGs, that being a racist term for people of African descent that's used in England, I guess. But pretty uncomfortable that, you know, things like that happened and no consequences were ever faced, you know.
Absolutely. Sure. And it's, you know, you'd think that we'd be over it today, but there is still a lot of strife in the world and rock communities around the world, music at large. But
it is a
process.
Yeah, for sure.
Hopefully we'll see the other side of it soon.
John?
Oh, my question now?
It's your question now.
Okay, so my last one was about baseball. This one will actually be about basketball, but it's going to start with baseball. Since I thought I had this on my list, but I wasn't going to use it. But since we talked about Michael Jordan in the last section, I thought I'd come back to this. Sorry, I'm scrolling. Okay, there's a myth. There is a myth widely believed and espoused by the man himself that the Major League Baseball logo, which features a field of red and a field of blue divided by the white silhouette of a batsman, is a simplified drawing of Hall of Fame slugger Harmon Killebrew of the Washington Senators and Minnesota Twins. According to the designer of the logo, Jerry Dior, however, that is exactly that, a myth. Dior claims to have designed the logo as a composite of many photographs of many hitters. However, the logo of one major American sports league is a representation of one single man, the NBA. Who is depicted in the NBA logo?
I feel like I might have come across this bit of trivia, despite my lack of sports knowledge. Mark, Claire, what do you guys think? You guys have any strong...
I do know this.
You do?
Yes.
Claire, you obviously know this.
Oh, my height, 5'4". I've been a basketball player for a very long time.
Claire actually had an extra coat rack put in her apartment so she could hang all her starter jackets.
Let me put it this way. The first thing I bought when I moved into my new place was a step stool. So...
This guy, it's your solid threes that you're known for in basketball.
Yeah, she's a perimeter shooter.
Mark, my guess was going to be Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh, that's wrong.
It is?
Yeah.
I was Larry just going to give you a hint that would get you away from Wilt Chamberlain.
No, no, I it's Jerry West is the basketball player's
that's
name.
That's right. That rings a bell now.
If I remember correctly.
It is Jerry West.
Okay, yes.
Hey. You're correct. I'm not going to withhold it and build the suspense any longer.
Yeah, that's
what was the hint?
The hint I was going to tell you as you were talking about Claire's height, as one of the probably, I mean, I think he's universally renowned as a top 10 ever basketball player. He's only 6'2", which would get you away from Wilt Chamberlain at least, because
yeah,
Wilt,
for sure,
famously known as the Stilt.
The Stilt.
Who is not 6'2".
Now, did you say that he designed both of those logos, or you just said that?
No, a different designer designed it. One was designed by a man named Alan Siegel. Although they look, there's a unity of design between the two leagues with the red and blue fields divided by a white silhouette. I believe the NBA logo came after the MLB logo, although it was by a different designer. But that designer does admit he was using Jerry West's logo. The NBA shies away from identifying anybody, but if you were to ask Alan Siegel, the man who drew it, he'll tell you it was Jerry West all along.
So, damn.
About Harmon Killebrew and the MLB logo, there's quite a bit of controversy. Harmon Killebrew, although he's dead now, swore up and down that he was in the commissioner's office one day and there was somebody there marking up a photograph of him and with a grease pen and drawn, you know, kind of smoothing out the lines around his silhouette. And he says, if you look at it, it looks exactly like me. And it really does. But the designer himself says, I've never been to the commissioner's office and I couldn't pick Harmon Killebrew out of a lineup because I don't watch baseball. They just gave me a bunch of photographs and I made a composite out of all of them. So, but.
Damn.
Fascinating.
But Jerry West is established fact.
Uh-huh. Miss Claire?
Well, I still feel like my questions are a little inadequate, but...
You're doing fine.
I'm just happy to be here.
We're happy to have you.
Ugh. Of course you are. okay, so... let me think. You guys are so prepared with how you've worded them. I just kind of had like bullet point, like little, you know.
Well, we've done this a time or two before, Claire.
All right. So the instrument, the Brannick device, is widely used to measure the human foot for shoe size. It's invented by Charles F. Brannick. But in what city did he invent this device?
Wow, Claire, this is actually a follow-up from a question that we had once before.
Yeah.
And
we had, what does the Brannick device
I was hoping
measure?
That's what the question was, because I knew that one.
And I knew that you guys would know that one, so I wanted to make it a little bit more spicy.
Yeah.
It feels Midwestern to me. It's got to be Detroit or
Cleveland
Chicago.
Was the
or
first Cleveland, that came
yeah,
to my mind.
It's
got to
be Midwestern.
Reason.
I don't know why.
The Brannick device from Cleveland.
And I can give you a hint if you want.
That's what the Hindenburg was carrying.
It was a blimp full of Brannicks.
It's a blimp of Brannicks.
Oh, the Brannachmany.
That's actually the term of venery for a bunch of blimps is a Brannick.
That radio announcer with the Mid-Atlantic accent, blimps. It was actually Dr. Brannick. It was him. He went on to create the
him
Brannick
all along.
My devices.
My empire is crumbling.
It's got to be a Midwestern city, though, right? It can't be New York. It can't be, you know.
Why not? Why not New York?
Be, I mean, it could, but.
If I was looking through facts about the Brannick device, trying to figure out a question to ask about it, and it said it was made in New York City, that wouldn't stick in my brain. It's like Pittsburgh or something. It's got to be somewhere.
Toledo. Yeah. Like, it's like just. Yeah. I can almost see a Brannick device with, like, you know, something. And then on the bottom it says Toledo, Ohio. Yeah, product of Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
You
know,
where are all the shoes being made?
That's what I was just about to say is, the rubber companies are all in Indianapolis, aren't they?
I don't know. That's good.
Yeah.
This is a good sus direction.
That's an interesting take.
Because if you look at the bottom of any old pair of shoes, they're Goodyear soles, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Indianapolis? Is that an option, or is that just...
Yeah, I mean, that's where I think the shoe soles are being made, I think.
But where's Cleveland? Like, I mean, why Cleveland, though? Is that just like a random...
It was just
Midwest?
Totally a feel, okay. Yeah.
My first thought was Detroit, but, I mean, that's just because it was a manufacturing town.
Well, I mean, a lot of... I mean, is that where tires...
Lots of
steel? I mean,
yeah.
Cars are made in Detroit.
Yeah.
You got all that metal.
Rubber too, I'm guessing. There might be a tire or two coming out of Detroit. What with all the cars?
Mm-hmm. Detroit.
Detroit!
That, I mean, I just pulled that out of my nose, though, so I mean...
I think these all have been nose-pulled. It wouldn't be out anywhere in California.
It
could be.
I feel like it's so old.
Could be anywhere.
Like, you know, I feel like we've had it for 100 years, the brand.
Atlanta. She said she could give us a clue. Do we want a clue?
I would love a clue.
Love a clue.
We'll take a clue.
Okay. I would consider immigration and popular shoe factory towns.
Oh, well, that does make you think of New York, doesn't it?
When I think immigration, New York, Florida,
Chicago,
Texas,
Polish immigrants, Chicago.
Even though Ellis Island is technically in New Jersey. Technically.
But we're looking for a city, not not a state. So maybe, or what would be...
Miami?
Yeah, but there's not manufacturing there either. She said immigration and also shoe manufacturing.
Well, isn't Zappos the website located in Las Vegas? Maybe it's Vegas.
Well, everything's based out of Rhode Island today because they all dodge their taxes, so...
I'm trying to think of like shoe manufacturing towns. Where are all those places from? I'm trying to think of that Nike question I asked you. I did some reading about Nike, Generation 6 or whatever their original name was. Sixth Dimension.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, tell me about it. Where are shoes made? My dad made shoes in Maine. But it's not Maine, I don't think.
Immigration.
New York City?
It's got to be New York.
Yeah, I guess. If you're looking for something you have a reason to actually guess, I'd have to go with New York, I guess.
All right, we're going to go with New York.
Seems like demand would be high there.
Everybody agree on that?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got the right state. But not the right town.
Not New York City.
Syracuse, New York.
Syracuse.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, a little unexpected, like but the, what is the name of that water, the waterway between?
The Hudson Bay?
Erie Canal.
Erie Canal.
Yeah, the Erie Canal connected a lot of those areas.
Yeah.
For transport, and it goes, I think, right through Syracuse, I believe. But but a lot of those upstate New York towns had a ton of shoe factories, and there was a huge Italian immigrant population that
they make great
a lot
shoes
of those factories, including members of my family.
Well, there you go.
There you are. That's fascinating. Do you feel good that we didn't get that right? I was going to say, I saw that.
There's a light in her eyes now.
Yeah, there was a sparkle.
Yeah, that's a great question.
You light up my life.
Well, I have a math. Oh, wait. It's Mark's turn, not my turn.
Is it my turn?
My bad, yes.
Mark Lee.
Oh.
Jean-Claire.
Here is your penultimate question. For the second round, what candy, whose name was meant to suggest a hospitable Western company, was invented by Bill Harmsen in 1949 in Golden, Colorado?
Candy.
Say it again.
Say please.
I'm going to take one ear of this headphone off so I can hear you better.
Okay. What candy, whose name was meant to suggest a hospitable Western company, was invented by Bill Harmsen in 1949 in Golden, Colorado?
Hospitable Western town.
hospitable Western Town.
That is an interesting hint.
Western Company or Western Town?
Western Company.
Western Company.
A Western
49.
A Western Company, a hospitable.
It was meant to suggest. So the name Western itself company. Should bring to mind, oh, this is a company from the West that's really nice.
When I think of the West and companies, I think of Wells Fargo. Here comes the Wells Fargo man.
They're not a
together,
candy.
Well, yeah, go far. They do always have dum-dums.
You know what I think is really hospitable? A nice payday.
Chupa Chups.
Give me your money. well, it's not whatchamacallit.
100 grand.
Yeah, that's super hospitable.
Hey, who doesn't want it? Just like settle yourself right into that pile of money.
All right, well, think about what candy would want itself to be associated with Western Company. What, you know, like, what about the, would it be, are you thinking, are you looking for a chocolate, or are you looking for,
it's like not a candy flavor? Bar necessarily, but a candy.
Mark does this. He considers candy bars candy, I think, so we should tread carefully here.
Well, would you be? Wouldn't say candy him. Bars are candy?
I guess I would.
I was going to say, what kind of fucked up
candy
logic
bar
is that?
The question. If I was talking about a candy bar, I would say candy bar in the question. That's what I'm saying.
Whitman's Sampler. Is it Whitman's? Ah. What are we looking for specifically? We're looking for the name of
the name of the candy.
Or the company, the candy.
Well,
name of the candy.
It's they're one and the same.
Okay, well, the Whitman samplers are those ones that have the fake needle point on them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very hospitable.
Whitman feels Western for some reason to me.
Walt Whitman, famous Western writer.
Wouldn't be a cherry cordial, would it? That would be like a name. Like,
but you'd need a company, yeah. A specific.
Lifesavers. What's more hospitable than saving your life? I'm struggling and dying.
Hey, you're welcome.
Here you go.
Nothing feels more pioneery to me than a Whitman sampler. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of anything else that feels pioneery, like Western.
Is that a company? Is the company called Whitman Sampler, though?
Oh, I think the box of chocolates is the sampler, but I think it's Whitman's is the company.
So, Whitman's chocolates. Werther's Originals?
I thought that, too.
Yeah, that feels... Does that feel like the Old West, or does that just feel like Grandpa?
Right.
Same thing. I guess the Whitmans just feels like Grandma.
Here, have a Werther's, kid.
And you're going to get emails. Somebody's going to say something to you. But Walt Whitman, I think, was in like Brooklyn. I don't think he was out West.
I interpreted Western to mean like the West, like as opposed to the East, like the like Asia.
Oh, I see what you mean. I gotcha.
That's how I interpret it. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm just so U.S. centric. I'm thinking like pioneer times. I'm thinking.
Mark, are you willing to make that distinction? Are you talking about Western as in Western United States or Western as in
Western
the
United
global
States?
West?
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well,
I am.
Like the Wild West.
Wiggity Wild.
Well, Wild West.
What feels like an old general store, like Werther's or Whitman's, or do we have any other ideas?
Can you read the question one more time?
Sure. What candy, whose name was meant to suggest a hospitable Western company, was invented by Bill Harmsen in 1949 in Golden, Colorado?
I feel like Werther's is a better guess when you say what candy, like when you phrase it that way, it doesn't feel like like Whitman's would be the answer to that, you know?
Yeah.
Like Whitman's isn't a thing without the sampler part. So I feel like Werther's makes a better guess.
I'm starting over my sus in my mind now to be like West focused.
Yeah.
Cowtails, those caramel chews, but that's not really a hospitable name.
Yeah.
But it does kind of have a Western vibe. I'm fine with Werther's Originals.
I want to think about it a little bit.
Okay, yeah. We
how
got
long
some time.
Is this podcast?
And
it'll get edited down to about 2 hours probably when it's all said and done.
So the name is supposed to suggest a hospitable
Western
company.
I mean, Werther's with the apostrophe S
suggests a company, you know, like it's this is the product of the Werther's company kind of idea. But although, like, it does sound like a last name too, though.
What are sort of like iconically Western things that imply hospitality?
Yeah.
Like, what would it be? Like
cabins, homes,
saloon. Yeah, I was just thinking like old home on the range kind
cozy
of thing.
Cozy chairs.
Yeah.
Ranch.
Ooh, Hidden Valley. Is that a candy?
I think you've just stumbled onto something really brilliant here.
Ranch candy.
Jolly Rancher. Jolly Rancher.
Jolly Ranchers. Holy shit, John.
Yes.
Is it the Jolly Rancher?
Jolly Ranchers.
Let's do it. I like that name the best. I like that one. I'm going with Jolly Rancher.
Mark, Jolly Ranchers.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Oh.
Yes.
Great job.
Thank goodness
guys.
Claire made us think about it a little longer.
Claire actually coming through. Man.
Actually coming through.
There we go.
I didn't think you guys were ever going to get there. I mean, your sus was great. I mean, all the ideas you guys came up with. Whitman's, I never would have even thought of. John coming up with that out of nowhere was fantastic.
Does a Whitman sampler look like it would just come across
Absolutely.
On a wagon train?
Well, it always reminded me of like Mama's Family.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that down homey, it's hard to say if it's Southern or Western, but.
Now you listen, child. You open up. I got a Whitman sampler here.
Yeah. So.
He's one by one. We're going to split them.
It definitely would make sense. And, very you know, as you guys sussed, I was like reading, thinking like, huh, maybe it's not as on the nose as I really thought it was. And then as soon as one of you said Jolly Rancher, everybody else globbed onto it. And that was that. Good job.
Like
fantastic.
A real team effort.
Yeah, that was beautiful. That was a work of art.
Thank goodness there's no timer. Edit that down to make it sound like I got it right off the bat. Cut Claire out.
We do that every week, John. All right, I have a math question for you guys.
Oh, no.
A bit of math history, maybe. Math knowledge might help you
the
out.
Brannick
Not a math
device.
Question. Don't worry. What mathematician whose name means renowned and glorious in its original Greek is often referred to as the father of geometry and the author of the elements?
I know this. Pythagoras. It's got to be Pythagoras. The Pythagorean theorem, triangles.
I'm Pythagoras.
Yeah.
They were both very, very sure of that. So I'm going to go with them.
You guys should have taken a little bit more time with that, probably. The correct answer is Euclid.
Euclid,
the father. Euclid is known as the father of geometry. And the author of The Elements. The Elements is actually a treatise that he wrote on geometry. Euclid, interestingly enough, though, is not mentioned as frequently as other Greek scholars, which has led some to believe that he is kind of a Shakespearean type character, like maybe he's a team of people instead of one. But that is just a theory. He has mentioned in the works of Archimedes a couple times and some other minor mentions.
Well, I wasn't Euclid. Coming around to Euclid anyway, so
I would never have guessed.
All right,
that.
Fair enough.
Here's looking at Euclid.
Oh no!
One of my
that
old employees.
So
oh, I wish I could. I cannot take credit for that at all.
That would have been perfect if we knew the answer. And it's like, no, guys, shut up. Here's looking at you, Clid.
With that, let's take a little break, and we'll come back with a couple of rate my questions and our final questions of the podcast. It is time for our final round of questions, but before we get to those, we do have a few rate my questions.
Rate my question. Rate our questions.
That was like in rounds. That was as bad as it could possibly be.
Can we like re-record that?
I think everybody just got louder. You know.
Hey, quick, can we redo it and then like take a year?
You really, it's so funny. She is the Tommy because Tommy asked us to re-record when we did the.
That sounds terrible.
All right, you ready?
The Tommy archetype.
Hit us again, Lee. The lead up.
Can we count it in though?
The lead up.
I'm sitting it out.
Why?
What's the count in for this? I don't know.
Oh, no, not count in, but what you say leading up to it.
A 3 and a 4 and a here we go. We're going to start.
Anything. I can do a 2 count.
I meant what you say leading up to it.
You want me to start from the beginning?
Not the beginning, but at least the...
We're going to start all the way over. Pretend like you haven't heard this yet.
Okay.
Here we go. All right, we're back. Before we get to our final round of questions, we have a few Rate My Questions to take a look at. Guys, that was not any better.
That was way better over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you're just
we'll see. We'll let you be the judge at home.
You're going to have to just sink it. It's all you're going to be able to do. You're going to have to pull out, put it on a click track.
There's going to be too many ghost tracks.
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm doing it anyway. All the time. All right, we have our first Rate My Question comes to us from Matt Hoffman, a.k.a. Proverbial Lightkeeper Matt, a.k.a. Mr. Bitterwood on Twitch, a.k.a. half of the upper class twits who has played our trivia live in person. Back when we were doing that kind of thing.
Yes.
In person.
Once upon a time.
Matt writes, hello, love the podcast, guys, and have been meaning to submit a question for a bit. What Negro League slugger, called by some the Black Babe Ruth and whose life was cut short at age 35 by a brain tumor, is estimated to have hit over 800 home runs?
It's Josh Gibson.
See, I was thinking maybe this is Hank Aaron's moment. It's not Hank Aaron?
Oh, no. Hank Aaron's still alive.
Oh, no. Life cut short at 35. Never mind. It can't be Hank
Aaron. I saw Hank Aaron this spring at Braves spring training. They were naming the street of the new Braves stadium after him. We had showed up to see practice, and practice wasn't happening. And we got on the Braves Twitter and saw all these photographs of everybody outside gathered around Hank Aaron. And we ran out there, and I was about 12 feet away from Hank Aaron, and I started crying.
It was very awesome.
It was the coolest thing to be that close to somebody like that. It's just amazing to me. I was just overcome. But anyway, sorry.
It's amazing.
I just love that you love baseball so much. I really do. And I don't really understand why. Like, we're in a band together. We hang out all the time. And like, just like the pride that you have in baseball, it just makes me believe in some part of America.
Hank Aaron is a
hero.
The
baseball part.
Yeah, just the baseball part.
I read Hank Aaron's autobiography, If I Had a Hammer, when I was like maybe 8 years old. And I mean, most of it was ghostwritten or whatever, but the grace with which he shouldered such an incredible burden, it's like nobody should have to have that kind of grace. But this man was blessed with it, and like an unmatched talent, like just to be close to somebody who is just such a great, I mean, he's a giant on the face of the earth. You know what I mean? Like he's one of the few giants who still walks the earth. And I was as far from him as I am from the front door here, you know, it's just amazing to me, but,
which is not very far.
Yeah.
For those, but Hank Aaron is not the answer to this
question. It's Josh Gibson. Catcher. I believe he was a catcher.
And that is correct. Josh Gibson is the answer.
And I never would
have known.
Know
that.
No clue.
Josh Gibson, he was the Homestead Grays. I have a collection of Negro Leagues hats, and I have the Homestead Grays because of in honor of Josh Gibson.
Yes, he played for the Grays during three periods of his career. First, 1930 to 1931, then again from 1937 to 1939. And finally, from 1942 to 1946, mm-hmm. He was, it says here on Wikipedia, he was known as the Black Babe Ruth. In fact, some fans at the time who saw both Ruth and Gibson play called Ruth the White Josh Gibson.
There's no doubt he was a better ball player. I believe he was a catcher. Does it say he was a catcher? I believe he was a catcher.
Let's see here. Position. Yes.
I mean,
right here in big text under his picture, but that's somehow catcher.
For people who don't know baseball, the catcher is the most physically demanding position on the field. I mean, the pitcher does something nobody else does, obviously. So in today's game, pitchers aren't typically great hitters, but through baseball history, catchers are almost never great hitters. Because even if they were the quality of athlete of the guys
and playing the other positions, they just get the crap kicked out of them all game long, especially back then before the kind of protective equipment we have today. So imagine getting up there feeling the best you've ever felt and trying to hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. And now imagine you'd taken 3 foul tips today off your chin, 2 off your left shoulder, and 1 of them to the groin. And then you have to get up there and do that. And to go out there and be the most talented guy on the field every time he ever stepped on a field – I think he was probably the best baseball player who ever lived, and we were robbed of the opportunity to compare him to the people we do know about because well, what do you even say for a reason why we would rob ourselves of something like that? But it's one of the big tragedies of baseball is that we don't know how he would have stacked up. Because of our own.
Yeah, it says here he died of a stroke at the age of 35 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Was he playing for – I think he also played maybe for the Pittsburgh Crawfords for a period of time between his –
He did early. Right. Yeah. That was his first – the first team that he went to after the Grays.
Yeah.
So he played for the Pittsburgh Crawfords for 4 years.
Yeah. I've never seen any video of him, but I have no doubt in my mind that he's the best baseball player who ever lived.
I like this question quite a bit. I think having a 4-person team and only one person knows it, but they, you know, it's something like well known from a subject that they're interested in. I think that is that makes for a good trivia question. There are some hints here, such as the nickname, some interesting facts that, you know, distinguishes him from other players of the era. This is a great question, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's a hard one. Definitely nothing I would have known, but. The fact that John was like, oh, as soon as you said Black Babe Ruth, he's like, well, I know this.
I'm a pretty specific audience. Like, I've got like 12 or 14 Negro Leagues baseball caps hanging up on the back of my bedroom door. So, I mean, the fact that I got it right away shouldn't deter anybody from using that question.
No.
Oh, yeah. And I think if we were in a room, you know, like having only one or two teams that might get this right out of, you know, 8 teams that might be playing trivia, I think is a good ratio, too, for – you know, a question. You want it to be something that's kind of on the fringe of common knowledge, I would say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, for good trivia. If it's too far, then you get people saying, well, how was I supposed to know that? That's what makes the questions we ask here on the podcast sometimes a little bit different. We get very specific with the knowledge, but
yeah.
I enjoyed that one. And then we have one here from Rumpelsnailedskin Mike C. Mike says, one person, Robert Todd Lincoln, had the misfortune of being physically present or nearby when 3 American presidents were assassinated. Which 3?
Oh.
That is the question.
Well,
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
What 3 have – I mean, McKinley was assassinated, wasn't he?
Yeah. So I know the only 4 presidents that have been assassinated, I know who they are. And I know that it's not JFK.
Yeah.
So that leaves Garfield, McKinley, and Garfield. Lincoln.
Garfield was one I wouldn't have gotten. I would have guessed William Henry Harrison, but he's the guy who died of a cold or the pneumonia or something.
Right.
He was the shortest.
Self-sabotage. He did not use an umbrella or a coat.
Yeah.
He's showing giving off. A speech.
The Donald Trump of his time.
So the real hint here is like
– it's all bullshit. You don't need to worry about getting sick.
Session in a like reasonable time.
Yeah. Yeah. Garfield was the one who was assassinated by the anarchists, right?
McKinley. Garfield, I think, was the one – that was the one I think I asked a question about Lee where the guy who assassinated him yelled, I'm the king of the stalwarts.
That's right.
Jesus.
I knew we'd address – maybe that's what I was thinking of. You know, maybe – I don't know. This question sounds so familiar. I couldn't place whether I had just read about Robert Todd Lincoln in doing research or if we'd talked about it on the podcast before. But okay, so we're going to go with Lincoln. You know what, though? I don't know why. Hold on a second. Before we commit to this, like, he wasn't at JFK's assassination. Are you guys sure?
That's 100 years later.
Is it possible, though, that he was an old man? I mean, I feel like there's some, like, weird irony in this question. Like, he wasn't present.
1865 to 1963. I mean, that's – and he would have – how old would he have had to have been at the theater?
At least 98.
Yeah.
Well, oh yeah. I don't. That's the thing. I don't know that he was at the theater. Yeah, I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Well, okay. So Lincoln was what, the 13th president? 15th?
Yeah, the 13th.
15th.
15th?
I thought so. Maybe I'm wrong.
1912, 1914, whatever.
What about Garfield and what about McKinley?
Well, McKinley was like 1901, right? And Garfield was the 1880s?
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be McKinley, Garfield, and JFK.
I mean, once your dad was the president, it's entirely believable that he spent a number of years in Washington. You know, he might have been in the vicinity mm-hmm. of, you know, of course, where was McKinley assassinated? That would be a big, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There's no way. There's no way that he was
okay,
there
for
JFK.
Okay, so let's go over the Lincoln assassination real quick. He's at the Ford Theater. I don't think Robert Todd Lincoln is there, but he might have been bedside. Like, yeah, they took him away. Yeah. You know, and he died at home. Does that sound right?
Wasn't he died down the street? He died in a boarding house.
Isn't Abe Lincoln's wife named Mary Todd Lincoln?
Yeah, but the son is Robert Todd. That's I think Mary Todd was her maiden name.
Well, yeah. I guess. Oh, okay. So well, I you know, I guess name. Like my whole line of thought here was it was. All predicated on years, that either it was Abe Lincoln, McKinley, and Garfield, or someone was born later, and it was McKinley, Garfield, JFK. Not that they were alive for all four, only present for three. I was thinking that you were either like born in this timeline or over a little bit. I wasn't considering like alive for the whole thing, but you know, they were like grabbing lunch for one of them. So I guess that's where I was at. I was thinking like if this person was definitely related to Abe Lincoln, then it had to have been Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's my vote.
So,
but I mean,
we're going to go with Lincoln.
I mean.
I don't know why. I just.
It does. I mean, it does have the fucking smatterings of. It would be like tasty as a.
What if there's a twist?
Like, mm-hmm. just. Like just
you would think
born.
It's Lincoln, but...
And the Lincolns go out to the Ford Theater. And, you know, they just have like a thing for going to presidential. Things all the time because their father was killed, you know, like when it was like 3 days old or whatever the fuck, you know, a month mm-hmm. old, but would make it so going to JFK's thing in Texas, not like completely ridiculous.
That's what I'm thinking, but I understand if you have trepidations about getting rid of Abraham Lincoln from the answer pool, considering it is Robert Todd Lincoln.
I think we're overthinking it. It's got to be the three that are clustered together within 40 years of each other.
Okay, so we're going to go with Lincoln,
McKinley, Garfield,
and McCartney. Okay,
so basically, yeah. Here. So here, I think you know, it's basically asking you what are the four presidents that have been assassinated? But
well,
kind
that's
of
assuming we're right. Let's find out. If
well,
we're
yeah.
right before we judge whether he's
right,
he's
but it would be like linked together, kind of in a way that also gives you an interesting fact.
Yeah,
if we're right. If not, it's that plus it's tricky.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing that you guys didn't listen to me because that is correct. It is Lincoln, Garfield, and McKinley. It says here right. on shapehell.org, Robert Lincoln was at the bedside of his father, Abraham Lincoln, when he died. Robert was at the Washington Railroad Station where Garfield was shot, and he was also at the Pan American Exposition as McKinley was mortally wounded.
Jesus so, Christ.
Okay. What a hellscape his life must
Jesus
have been.
Christ.
For real. Yeah. Got like that Dana Carvey energy. Jesus. Stay away from
him. He needs as many face-up pennies as he can find.
Oh.
Well, with his fucking dad's
yeah,
face on it.
Yeah, that's
to remember,
I thought that was intentional.
To remember his dad's fucking death.
It works for reverse for him. if you'd like to write us with a rate my question or a miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966.
Yes.
All right.
And now we're doing our last questions. And now mm-hmm. since Claire, if you want to ladies first and ask us a wonderful question.
Oh, you're going to listen to me now?
Yes. Finally.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Cool.
You say something worth hearing.
We're so funny.
Now come in. You're coming in hot after that second round question with Syracuse. So you got to have something good here.
All right, cool. All right. So I said I was going to have a medical question. What is the actual name of your inner elbow?
Your elbow pit.
Is this another baseball thing? Is it called the dugout?
I swear to God, I knew the answer to this at one point.
But, it's not the weenus. The weenus is on the elbow skin.
Yeah.
Right?
I also think it's not an actual name. So today we'll be operating on the weenus.
The anti-weenus.
I'm sorry. We can't accept anti-weenus. It's intuinus.
Intuinus. Yeah, I know I've seen this. I know I've seen this in the inverse. What is the something?
The pocket.
Know, it gives you the word. Mm. Well, it's, you know, it's I like see. The
question is inverted.
Yeah, like, you know, where would you find the flow? What would you find the girdum?
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's the inside of your elbow.
That's like the peanut pocket. That's what we call it in my family. It's where you keep your peanuts.
Well.
So just learned something.
Well,
very
you just
disturbing.
Ruined it. You got it right off the bat. The peanut pocket.
Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't mention your birthday. Happy birthday, Lee! You just
what a special one to be here.
A year older, just a couple days ago.
On your birthday.
Yeah, I don't know why. I wish the peanut pocket thing made me think of your birthday.
Kyle made a lovely Lee trivia, which many of my friends came to play.
Indeed.
It was nice.
And I get to see you in person for the first time in 4 months.
Just about.
Socially distanced, masks probably. And all.
Did you get to
outside,
smell his hair?
I did smell his hair. But that's only because he's been coating it in shit. He's basically turned into Tom Hanks.
I use baby wipes like Brad Pitt and Zac Efron. I don't shower. Baby wipes.
He was looking like Tom Hanks in what was that movie? Big.
Castaway?
Oh,
Big.
Big. Exactly. It's a build-up to make you think you're talking about Castaway, but then you mentioned another movie. The Terminal.
What's the one where he plays Sully? Is that called Sully?
No, that's the Terminal, the one where he's like from like
some fictional country. Western, European
that like
country
disappears while Eastern he's on. Yeah. And so he has to live in the Terminal.
But what's the one
I think it was called Sully, wasn't
it? Is it called Sully?
Think so. Lee's looking like that one Tom Hanks movie
he's
where he like
shit in his hair. You know,
shit his
that
hair.
Was
like
the
really
one movie
dirty
where he was actually
fought,
never like trying
himself.
To seek out the water.
What was it, Sully?
What's that? Master and Commander?
No, Sully was the one movie where he's actually trying to seek out the water.
You're right. Yeah. What was the question? Oh yeah, the inside of the elbow. I have no idea.
The name.
Can I give
I have
you
no
a
idea.
Hint?
The vulva. Isn't that where the G spot is?
Do you want a hint?
I'll sure. take a hint. I love a hint.
Okay, while it is not the anti-Venus, it is the anti-something.
Whoa.
The lady antebellum.
The anti-meridian. The anti...
anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Could it be the anti-elbow?
No. Antirum?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Well, yeah. So you have the anterior cruciate ligament is one of them. I mean, there's one in your knee too, but I guess anterior though. So maybe it's just the ulnar anti-ulna. I'm just going through baseball surgeries.
Yeah,
now.
Well, that's like Tommy John surgery. Yeah.
Use your strength, John. Yeah. Use your
ulnar collateral ligament replacement surgery, Mark.
Ulnar lateral anti-ulna? An ulna is a bone.
Yeah, it's the that's the bone on the back of your elbow, I think. It's that nub on the back of your elbow is your ulna.
I think maybe the not. Ulna is one of the I think it's like this no, bone or this bone, isn't
tibia,
it?
Tibia
fibia.
And I did say anti, not anti.
What did I say? Antirum
means before, not opposite.
I don't know why antirum like sticks out in my mind.
I have no idea. This is a cool question, though.
It's a stumper.
I'm looking forward to figuring out what I can actually start calling the peanut pocket.
Claire is way too turned on by stumping people. Now she realizes the highest highs when you ask someone a question they don't know it, and you feel this power over them. Yes, you don't know, do you?
You fools!
She's a stumper.
I don't know.
For someone who literally never has the answer, it's a really fun power trip for me.
She's a trivia dominatrix.
Should we go with antirum? I don't know. It sounds medical.
It's probably the best we've got.
Yeah, it's better than anything I'm going to come up with.
All right, we're going to say antirum.
Wrong!
You terrible, dumb bastards.
Oh, my gosh. We are sampling that.
Wrong!
Claire's going to be in every episode of your podcast going forward.
Yes.
Can you put this maniacal laughter in as a sample?
Yeah, we'll replace the laughter on the... There's a slight laughter. You probably can't hear it through this, but there's a slight laughter at the end of the wrong sign that Mark points out, because everybody goes, aww.
And you hear one person go...
Can you just put my maniacal laughter there instead?
Yes, that's exactly...
To dehumanize coming the people next who week. Get it wrong. All right, cool. It is the anticubital.
I never would have got it.
Anticubital.
Cubicle? Cubital.
Cubital. Cubital.
Never would have got that.
The anticubital.
Anticubital.
Hmm.
Anticubital.
And that's the name of
the
pocket?
Peanut pocket. Yeah.
That's your peanut pocket.
That's your peanut pocket.
I'm gonna stay with that. The peanut pocket. I wanted
anticubital.
I wanted it to sound like a hospitable area, you see.
Unless you're gonna tell somebody about the snack you're about to have, you can say, let me go for my anticubital peanut. The one I keep in my peanut pocket.
That does sound medicinal. All right.
Anticubital peanut.
John, do you have a final question for us?
I have my final question for you. It's gonna be about food. Generally, and fruit specifically.
Okay.
Here we go. Have you ever noticed that banana-flavored candy has never tasted like any banana that you've ever had before?
Yes.
That's because artificial banana flavoring is based on a cultivar of banana that doesn't any longer exist. Every banana you've ever had has probably been a Cavendish banana, which is a pale imitation of this cultivar of banana. It was knocked out almost completely in the 1950s by Panama disease, a fungal disease. But prior to that, almost every commercially available banana in the world was this cultivar. What is this cultivar of banana?
All I can think about is that picture that you had on your phone.
Michael Bublé eating a corn cob. Have you ever seen Michael Bublé eat corn on the cob, Lee?
I don't know that I've ever seen Michael Bublé. I think he's a myth. I'm not even
you
sure
gotta Google. Says. You gotta use the Google machine and look up Michael Bublé corn cob. You've gotta see it.
It is something to behold.
Miles, if you're listening, send us a link to that. I know you're
the man does not know how to eat corn on the cob. He eats it like a banana.
Like
fascinating. What a fascinating creature.
Like a banana. Are you looking up Bublé in the wild?
He is a lizard person. There's no doubt about it. He's from another planet.
I always assumed that the artificial banana flavor was like a pina colada or some kind of like mix. I didn't realize it was based on a real life,
apparently
near extinct fruit.
Apparently it is true. I've never had this cultivar of banana. Apparently you can still get it. It's not completely knocked out, but you can only get it in Southeast Asia. That's where it's originally from. And it's
like
still
a little
there.
Bit like penicillin.
I don't know what penicillin tastes like. I don't know.
Moldy bread?
But This cultivar, it has it's known worldwide by a French name. It's known in the U.S. by the English translation of that French name. So it's got two names. Either of them, they mean the same thing. It's just a translation of the French name. It's probably got a French name because being from Southeast Asia, the French colonialism, all of that, I would guess.
Mm.
But
that makes sense. Is it small? Is it Le Petit Banane?
It is not that. It doesn't have banana in the name. But it does.
Is it Sweet Nanner?
sweet Nanner. She got it right. It is Vivid Nanner. It does have to give you a hint, it's got a person's name and an adjective. A two-word name, an adjective and a person's name.
I wonder if it's a French person's name, like Louis
Lafayette.
What?
Lafayette.
Fontenot.
Napoleon.
Tribadeau. Bonaparte.
Baton Rouge.
Bonaparte.
The short Bonaparte banana.
I hope you don't have any listeners in Montreal.
We do. Actually, we just had one of them write in yesterday.
My terrible French accent. Schooled us on Michael Bublé last week. Miles.
No kidding. Montreal. Ask Miles if he's ever seen Michael Bublé eat corn on the cob.
Miles, tell us.
And Miles, if you live in Canada, shouldn't your name be Kilometers? And do you get that joke?
We've already established that Miles is Michael Bublé in hiding.
Oh, I hope not. He's going to be very offended that I called him a space alien lizard.
You got to find this corn cob picture in the show notes. If you're listening. It is amazing. He takes it head on.
Is it a Bublé banana?
It is not. It's not. Hey, you know what?
We're getting closer, I think. But you said we're getting closer. Not in the name.
You're getting closer.
A horny Bublé.
These all sound like you.
That is an adjective and a name.
Oh, it's an adjective and a name. I didn't even think about the Michael Bublé connection.
Courtney Bublé, the Michael Bublé connection. Coming soon via Vivid Video.
Hey, is that a Cavendish banana? No, this is a horny Bublé. No way.
We were
you gotta eat it like a corn cob.
this whole Bublé thing came up because I was flipping through my camera roll and I save, obviously, I save funny pictures and memes.
Like you do.
And Claire, looking over my shoulder, saw the picture of Michael Bublé eating she's like, is that Michael Bublé eating a banana? And I said, no, it's Michael Bublé eating a corn cob.
He is a phenomenon.
He really is.
I have no idea, guys. I didn't know there was. I mean, I assumed that there were different types of bananas.
Ugly Betty.
I'll tell you. I'll make a deal with you. If you give me the name in French, I'll give you a hint.
Oh, good.
Because it'll give it
the name.
Claire already said half the name when she was guessing things in French.
Claire,
we're talking about Michael Bublé.
Nanner.
Did you say La Fontaine? Did you say
if I say it now, it would give it away. Well, yeah, really don't say it. There's something Claire said. We were talking about Michael Bublé, and that was when it struck me. Yeah.
Oh.
But now you got to give it to me in French.
Michel is French.
Yeah, but you got to give me the two words.
But
there's
also an adjective word.
So what's the adjective that goes with it? What does it look like? How would you describe it when Michael Bublé eats corn on the cob like a banana? Other than hilarious.
Le chewing.
There's a...
So like a word in French that means like silly
No.
Stupid.
Oh, no. I don't think it's silly. Well,
right. Michelle Amour?
No?
Is he loving on that corn cob?
It is kind of what it looks like.
I don't know. Michelle.
Cher Michelle. Like,
geez.
My French is not strong.
Petite, but that's not.
He doesn't look small.
what's it called when a word is this spelled the same in
homonym?
Well, no, in two different languages. It's there's a word for that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Something
that
innate.
Be your question.
Good trivia innate. Question.
Yeah, right.
On the phone?
No, it's
or is
not
that just
it's
a sound alike.
I'm going to Google that. It's not. Because it has a, well, I guess I asked the question anyways.
So I was going to say, you look up the answer to your own question.
Like hospital would be an example of this, where it's spelled the same in both languages.
Yeah.
I've Googled this before. It's a suggested search for me. A cognate. So this word looks like a cognate, but if you took it as a cognate, it means something different in English than it means in French. Mm. So it is not a cognate.
It's like a deceptive cognate.
Exactly, yeah. You would think it was a cognate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a homophone cognate.
A park banana, as we were talking about.
We were talking about parks.
Banana park. We call it a banana park over here.
It's not a banana lot. It's a banana park.
I have no idea.
I'm stumped.
Yeah, this is one of those that you either know it or you don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's really any way to kind of suss it out.
Can we just think of like an adjective in French?
A cognate?
Mark was onto something when he said petite, but it goes back to that homophone thing.
Yeah.
With the Michelle.
Like grand.
You're getting closer. But what's the French word?
Grand Michel.
How do you say big in French, Lee?
I thought it was grand. Grand.
Large. Like.
Le large. Big Mac.
Humongous. No.
It is. I mean, giant. I can give you this now that we're closing in on it. It is the Big Mike.
Oh my God.
The Big Mike?
Yes.
We call her the Big Mike.
Hell yeah.
Do you want me to give it to you?
Michelle,
sure.
Give it to me.
I'm not going to give it unless you guys agree for me.
All right,
now.
Wait.
Claire just won't give in. That indomitable spirit.
Yeah. So big, I mean grand.
It's like a word that translates to big, but if you took it as a cognate, it wouldn't mean big in your mind. It would mean something else. And what it would mean in your mind is when you saw somebody eat a corn on the cob like a banana, you'd say, oh my God, that's...
Gorge.
Are you close?
That's not it?
If I was trying to eat a banana...
Mm-hmm.
Or if I was trying to eat a corn on the cob like a banana, you'd say, oh, quit doing that. That's...
glizzing.
I got to be very careful
about
what I say
here. I've walked you right
here.
Up to the precipice here.
Gros Michel.
It's the Gros Michel. The Big Mike. Gros Michel.
Oh, I've never thought of gross as being a word for big in
apparently,
French. Huh?
Like a gross ton, a gross
okay,
tonnage,
yeah,
total
that makes
tonnage.
Total sense.
Hey, maybe it's the total mic. I don't know, but it's the big mic in English. Gros
it's
Michel.
It's the whole damn mic.
It's the total package.
I don't feel bad about not knowing the banana answer, but I do feel bad about not coming up upon gross. That's
maybe
good.
I'm wrong. Maybe it's not a direct translation. I don't speak French. Your listeners in Montreal are going to write in and say I'm an idiot.
Like
but
Michel,
worldwide, it's known as the Gros Michel, and in the U.S., it's the Big Mike.
All right, the Big Mike. I'll remember that next time I have those candies.
Yeah,
a Mike and Ike.
I don't think there's a banana flavor in Mike and Ike.
But who knows?
It's unknowable. It's all unknowable.
So yeah, gross. Like gross point blank. Gross. G R O S S E means big. Even G-R-O-S means large.
Le Gros Michel.
Yeah.
All right. My last question for you guys has to do with book jargon.
Mm. Okay.
What is the term for a hardcover book that has been marked to be liquidated due to lower sales?
What has been liquidated?
What is the term for a hardcover book that has been marked to be liquidated due to low sales? You can usually identify these books by a line of black felt tip across the top of the book spine, near the spine of the book at the top. There's a term for these books. What are they?
Bullshit. Garbage.
I feel like it's a nickname.
Yeah, it's like a slash down or something.
Shine down.
Like I'm trying to think of like retail things. Like if I were in retail, they would have called it like black lining.
Did you get this question from Kyle?
No, I didn't. But she didn't know it. She does have some experience working in a bookstore.
I know.
So she confirmed. She was like, "That's good book jargon right there."
Mm. So she looked at it and did she do one of these where she like went like this with her glasses and went, "Yeah, that's some good book jargon."
No, I'm still waiting to write a question that good, Mark.
that warrants the removal of glasses. Hold on, I got to see this to believe it. Let me take my fucking glasses off. What if the government hacked into my mind when I got my COVID test and my glasses are now just computer screens and the government controls what I see? I know. Look, if there was any place in your brain that you were going to plant a microchip, it would be on that plate or whatever. Oh, Jesus.
It's the pharynx.
It's pharynx.
That's the thing. And if you're skeptical of what Mark's saying, that's just what the chip wants you to think.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know that I know this.
I would guess it's like something retail-y, like slashed or like black lined or.
Oh, that would be fucking perfect if he says, "Oh, they use a black marker to mark it, and they're called black marked." Because I did that once with a question with him. I know I always do this, and I always get too meta in my own mind. But I had a question where I said, "What glittery substance?" And the answer was glitter. And he and other people playing my trivia were both very mad. Yeah.
Now we're getting into trivia theory.
We do. Oh, John, you have no clue how heavy into trivia theory we have gotten. To be liquidated? To be 451?
Ooh.
What's the question now? What's the phrasing of the question again?
What is the term for a hardcover book that has been marked to be liquidated due to low sales?
We're looking for what they would call the book. What would they call the book?
Well, and also hardcover book.
Do they throw away the paper jacket on those? Have they been skinned or something like that? If it's a hardcover, why is it specifically hardcover?
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing. So I remember we used to go to...
De-jacketed?
Well, remember we used to go to... Barnes & Noble, and they would rip off the covers. But they probably have to do something more intense for hardcover ones.
Well, maybe... Do they just throw away the jacket? Have they been skinned? Have they been de-jacketed?
Fleeced? Yeah, de-jacketed.
Undressed. Stripped.
But then we're still looking for the noun, you know, because we're looking for what do you call the book?
What's the term for hardcover books? Oh. Is that what it is? What's the term for hardcover books?
Yeah, the term for hardcover books that have been marked for liquidation due to low sales.
So it also sounds like it would be something you'd pluralize.
Nudes?
Yeah.
Just want it to be something sexual, Mark.
Always. Quarantine's been hard on me.
You want to look at that Michael Bublé picture?
For Mark, it's been hornantine.
I haven't stopped. It's in my mind. Every time I close my eyes, I see that thing jamming down his throat, his creamy throat. Creamy because of the notes, not because of... Well, who knows?
Can I get you some mayonnaise, Mark?
I make my own elotes. DIY elotes. I got my own cheese. Got my own mayo.
Paprika.
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know. Call them...
stock. It's got to be a cool name. Or it wouldn't be a question, right?
Are we worried about the black mark on them? Or are we worried about...
Yeah,
tattoos?
Are they just blackouts?
For liquidation. So liquidation means like they're selling them super cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Slash down.
Can we call it a bargain?
Slash
clearance. The answer's clearance, right?
Clearance Clemens.
Can we call it a bargain?
Clearance Thomas.
I feel like Ned Flanders when I say that.
Biggity bargain.
I don't know. You want to go with slash downs?
Doesn't sound like anything, but
it's the.
Can we have a hint? Is there a hint?
Let's see here. Hints. The hint would be, I will give you a hint. This is a term that you might also find in the world of math.
That's interesting. I feel
like it's got something to do with the diagonal slash on it then. Do they call them fractions? Because they've been slashed, maybe it's like a clever name for it.
They're a fraction of the price.
Oh, yeah.
Good with that.
Yeah.
You both had the same idea. You want to go with fraction?
I want to think about it for another minute, though.
Yeah. Let John cook for a minute.
John's in the mind palace. Simmer.
Something, it's got to, if it's math, it's got to come back to the, that, slash that's on the spine.
Divisions.
Joy division.
How many words is the answer?
No. I gave you your hint.
What's the first
again?
Letter?
I walked you guys all the way to the answer of mine.
Marcus is straight up looking up something on his phone right now.
it's got to just be fractions, I guess. That's the best I can do.
We're going to go with fractions.
No, sorry. You guys were getting closer, but they're called remaindered books.
Remaindered books.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. That not to be sense. Confused with a stripped book, which is a paperback that's stripped of its cover, intended to prove its destruction, but these paperbacks are usually sold in the secondary market. I'm sure you've seen them before in your reading journeys.
Yeah, they send the covers back to get their refund or whatever.
Right. It's the same thing. The remaindered books are usually sold for a fraction of the retail cost and then sold at some kind of book clearance store.
Yeah. Remaindered. I feel like I did
remaindered books
in my mind.
So if you ever see a book with a black felt marker atop the cross of the book, the spine, it's a remaindered book.
It's the same
idea.
You're
reading
with
something that was not very popular.
If you get a vinyl record that has a hole punched in the corner, apparently it's the same idea.
Is there a jargon for that?
I don't know. I was talking to Marty about it because he had a whole collection of them, and he's like, that means that they're probably record store copies that they were they're marked down. As not having sold and somebody just took them home, but they punch a hole in them.
Marty from Beach Records.
Something
great place.
I wish I could remember the name of that.
All right. You guys ready for your last question?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, all right. The TRS-80, one of the earliest mass produced and mass marketed retail home computers, was launched by what company?
One more time.
The TRS-80, one of the earliest mass-produced and mass-marketed retail home computers, was launched by what company?
So that, like, early computer companies were like Packard Bell.
Older than that.
Like IBM.
IBM, maybe. Apogee. Commodore. If you'd consider those a computer.
How early was Apple?
I'm pretty early. But not.
They were 80s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they split off from, Microsoft and Wozniak joined up with Jobs. Microsoft, obviously more software focused than hardware, so it wouldn't be them.
Yeah. I mean, IBM's just low hanging fruit. It can't be IBM.
Right.
When was Packard Bell a thing?
I mean, before, I mean, it could be Bell is Alexander Graham Bell. Like that, right. That stems from that. So.
And if it's like large.
Was Packard Bell, did they do computer? Hewlett Packard, I associate with computer hardware, but Packard Bell, did they do computer hardware or were they still just doing communication stuff?
Packard Bell was computers. There's a bunch of phone companies that were Bell when they split up. Demonopolized the phone company. A bunch of them, like, you know, Pacific Bell and.
So it would have been a large company equipped to manufacture.
If it was me playing alone, IBM is what I would guess for this. But you're right that it does seem a little obvious for such a late round thing. Commodore is an interesting guess.
Yeah, I don't remember when and if you'd consider the Commodore a personal computer or not.
TRS-80. You know who also had a T blank 80 would be Texas Instruments. They had a calculator.
Yeah.
The TI-80. I don't know what
TI is. Texas Instruments 80, though. Like, that's right in the name. So
right. But what's TRS? Maybe they hadn't come up with the TI thing yet. I don't know. Just a guess.
S is almost certainly system. I mean, that's Texas Instruments is just as good a guess as anything. They were in the hardware game early on.
Mm-hmm. And they might, like, you know, while IBM is like building supercomputers, they're focused on providing computing solutions to institutions and stuff. That is ripe for a smaller company to just kind of swoop in and release something for the mass market.
Yeah, you gotta consider that the idea of a computer in your home seemed crazy to people who are using computers at their jobs.
Mm-hmm. What would, like, you need a computer at home for?
Yeah, exactly. So a company like IBM would definitely get beat to the punch on something like that.
Yep, and I think they were scrambling, if I remember correctly, to find some software for their own computers, which is when they met Microsoft. I feel good about Texas Instruments. I feel good about IBM. To an extent, I feel good about Packard Bell, but I just don't know for sure if they were involved in computers.
I would go with the Texas Instruments, I guess.
What do you think, Claire?
I feel like, I mean, I don't know if it's Texas Instruments because my dad had an interest in computer building from the time that I was real young. We had computer parts laying around the house all the time.
Anything super old with a name on it?
I feel like, I don't know. I feel pretty good about Packard Bell, but I could be wrong. I remember IBM stuff laying around, but this is like the 80s and early 90s. So home computers were like 1970s.
Yeah, I don't know the timeline because I know my dad had like PC Shopper and stuff like that. And like, but that was like the Radio Shack kind of equivalent. Like you built it at home. It wasn't a package deal with a name on it, you know? And I don't know if the package deals came first and then the home PC enthusiast, and then they went back to brand names that you just buy as a package deal. I'm not clear on the timeline.
I feel like it had to be a semi-household name to be widely distributed as a thing people trusted to buy.
Yeah.
That's the reason I don't necessarily believe it's Texas Instruments.
I don't know. I think Texas Instruments has some clout in the computing world.
Yeah, but I think back then they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys feel strongly about that, I will go along with it.
What was the beginning of it, Mark? It was that they were at the very beginning, right?
T for Texas.
The TRS-80, one of the earliest mass-produced and mass-marketed retail home computers.
Retail home computers.
Was launched by earliest. What company?
What so it's that? Not the earliest. It's just figuring out what that model is. So then mm-hmm. it could, yeah, we could go with Texas Instruments. It's a T something. A little bug on my foot. Maybe jump. It was like, it felt like little tickles.
That's just our no-nonsense mascot.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Timmy Termite.
Yeah, I guess that's my best guess. Would be Let's Texas Instruments to take a stab in the dark. For somebody who I think getting back into trivia theory, you might be looking for when you're crafting a question, you know, something that people don't even associate with computers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm
sorry if it's Packard Bell, Claire. We will see.
All well, right. The Texas good news is you're wrong. And the better news is you're both wrong.
Wow.
TRS 80 stands for Tandy Radio Shack.
Damn Tandy.
And as soon as you guys were trying to figure out TRS, and as soon as John mentioned Radio Shack, I was pretty convinced someone was going to go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
RS Radio Shack. What is the T? And just try and think of a lone T name. It was the radio. The name was an abbreviation of Tandy Radio Shack Z80 microprocessor. It had a full stroke QWERTY keyboard, a Zilog 780 processor. You remember Dr. Zilog, I'm
Dr.
sure.
Dr. Zilog, Lee? Yes.
A good
Made
friend of yours.
To Temple of Yogg, the video game that I worked on.
Yep.
And is now in an awesome band called Shwarma, which everybody should check out.
It also came with 4 kilobytes of DRAM.
Yeah.
Standard memory when many 8-bit computers shipped with only 1 kilobyte and a small size and desk footprint, floating point basic 1 or level 1 basic language interpreter and ROM, and 64 character per line video monitor. Starting price of $600 and equivalent to last year of $2,500.
I wish you would have asked me how much I thought it cost, because I was thinking $2,500.
And you were correct.
Damn.
Wow, Tandy. I should have guessed Tandy.
That is a good throwback. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
I don't think I've ever heard that name.
I remember Tandy computers now.
My computers in elementary school were all Tandys.
Ancient.
We didn't have the Apple IIe's at Cape Elementary School. We had Tandys.
Lost but not forgotten.
Well, John, Claire, it has been an absolute pleasure having you here on the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast today. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. We miss you.
Right back at you. And listeners, don't forget to check out A Different Kind of Heat. You can pre-order it on Bandcamp. You can listen to a couple songs off of that. So do that. And Mark, thank you for joining me as well again. It's been a pleasure to join you.
It's been wonderful to be joined.
We're joined. And that concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Thank you for listening. And join us on Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. And you can also support us on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you, as always, to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captains, Gil.
It's Gil.
Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial light keepers, Jenny, Christopher, Logan, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. And thanks to our Rumpelstiltskins, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Mike Carvey Kills.
Michael S.
Mike, Sequoias are now canceled.
And Michael J.
Mike, jargon is a bit out there for conventional trivia.
Well done.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or a miscorrection or a little no-note, you can do so by contacting us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
We have a Facebook group you can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there for any fun goings-on that we have happening. And finally, do not forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners, have a great week.